This is On the Other Hand. A podcast sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas that explores politics and other issues of importance to Arkansans through conversations with community leaders. Stay with us as we talk to another leader in Arkansas who works across differences to get things done and to bring us closer together.
Hello, and welcome to On the Other Hand. I'm your host, Glenn White. I'm here with my co-host, April Chatham Carpenter. So I hope you're ready for today's conversation with a community leader in Arkansas who helps work toward solutions.
Well, Glenn, we had a great conversation with Dr. Rebecca Glazier from the University of Arkansas at Little Rock in our previous episode, and we're going to continue with the second part of this conversation we had with Rebecca, and we're going to learn more about the importance of focusing on cross-cutting relationships and finding common ground in the humanity of people who have different experiences, as well as her hope that we can have conversations that are less partisan as we work together across the political divide. So I'm excited for folks to join us.
You know, what you're doing there with your class is really good, but given that you're a political scientist, you know the things happening in our society, all the increasing incivility, the overt hostility, at some points even rising into violence. People don't want to compromise. They don't want to talk to the other because that's kind of giving in to the enemy. I mean, how are we going to deal with people like that in our society?
That's such a big question, and it's kind of a scary one, because to a certain extent, you can't force someone who doesn't want to talk to come and talk to you. On an individual level, if it's someone that you know personally, and I think that maybe some of us or most of us have those people, you know, maybe an uncle or a cousin or someone who just doesn't want to talk and thinks that they're right and doesn't want to hear anything else. I think that it can be helpful to try to focus on those cross-cutting relationships, right? To say, all right, let's not talk about the politics part here. Let's remember the relationship part, because that's where we're in an in-group. We feel like we're in an out-group because we share different political views, but we're in an in-group in that we're family, or we're in an in-group that we're friends, or we're in an in-group that we're neighbors, or, you know, we're in an in-group that we're all Americans, right? There's some kind of in-group that we can make. We're in an in-group that we care about the same baseball team. There's some kind of in-group that we can create. Let's focus on that. And if it's someone that you have a relationship with, to focus on that relationship first. And if that feels good, then you can try to broach the politics part if you feel like that politics part is still something that needs to be broached. But if it's someone who just doesn't want to talk about politics and never wants to compromise, I don't know that you can make them. And so maybe the best thing you can do is to try to not have negative interactions with them by focusing on the parts of your life that overlap in a positive in-group way.
So when things get ugly, just do what you can to kind of promote the relationship, the continued growth of the relationship.
Yeah.
I love that. And I love trying to find something that I have in common with you. So you gave multiple examples. Are your family, are your friends, neighbors, sports fan? At the very least, maybe we're all Americans. You know, maybe we have that in common. And so that's amazing. Thinking back to a couple of things that you've said as well, and you know, in your classes, you focus on policies and consequences. And I'm wondering if there might be an example of an issue or two that maybe you've talked about in classes or that you found to be effective to chat, that maybe, you know, that you talk about that currently tends to divide people across the political aisle, but might offer possibilities for finding common ground and at least partially reducing some of the perceptions of differences that we have among us across the political aisle. Do you have an issue or two that you have found that students across their political spectrum have been able to come together and say, we have some things in common when we look at this policy?
Yeah, it can sometimes be hard to find that common ground. I think two issues come to mind right away in terms of being in the classroom. I just got back from teaching a study abroad course to Spain, and the course was about Islam and migration in modern and historical Spain. And immigration is an issue that is a tricky one in the US that it's hard to find common ground on sometimes with immigration. And I think it was helpful that we were focusing on immigration in a different country, because we could say, you know, this isn't the US's problem. We're talking about migration in Spain. But other things that we did is the students had a list of five fiction books, and they had to choose one of those fiction books to read. And it was a story of a refugee or an immigrant. And fiction can really help build empathy. And so the students read one of those fiction books. We met with a refugee organization in Spain. We heard stories of people who were refugees. We talked with them. We got to know them. And so in our conversations, where we talked about academic readings and we talked about migration issues, issues in the US and our immigration policies naturally came up. But students who were very, very far on different sides of the political spectrum found common ground in the humanity of people who were migrating. And that gave me hope in that classroom experience, that there was common ground in talking about people being treated in a humane way and honoring the fact that that they're all people and they shouldn't be discriminated against or shouldn't be treated in an inhumane way. So in the classroom, that is a place where I have seen students find common ground, even when I knew they were politically very far away from each other. And in my research, I think this work that we've been doing on race is one where I have a little bit of hope. And that comes from the research that we've done on faith-based racial justice and reconciliation. Because I think when we talk about race from a faith perspective, we can see how many faith traditions believe, for instance, that everyone is made in the image of God, that we have a religious obligation to help people who are suffering or to comfort people who stand in need of comfort. And many religious people might be a little bit further to the right on the political spectrum. And people who tend to care about racial justice issues might be a little farther to the left on the political spectrum. And so looking at race from a faith-based perspective might help bring those people together to see a middle ground on what we can do to help racial justice and reconciliation efforts go forward.
I have never thought of race being used in that way. That is in the religious, that's so interesting because, it's a divisive topic, or it can be a divisive topic, and yet you're seeing it as a place where the folks who might be more conservative and the folks who might be more liberal actually can come together and actually value something together, the need to work together. So this kind of brings us back to that Little Rock congregation study that you're doing. How did you go about finding that, I mean, I know that the research as a social scientist that you know, you did study to find out that race was one of those four possible topics that you mentioned, and that were top four issues, and that the people in the congregations or the clergy said that it was something that they could work on getting involved. When you actually brought that up to their level of awareness and said, hey, this is what you all have in common, were they surprised? I mean, how did you get to restart that conversation with them to find and realize that was common ground?
Yeah, I think that the trick was to try to get a diverse group of clergy out to the Race and Faith Summit to share these findings with them, because we were really excited to show that this was an issue that congregations wanted to get involved in, because we had heard from some clergy that we don't want to talk about race. It's too divisive. People don't want to hear about it at church. This is going to make people uncomfortable. We don't want to talk about it. And so we were really excited to say, wait, they do want to talk about it. This is the number one issue that they want you to talk about. In fact, they see church as a safe space to talk about this. This is the place. You are the person, you as a clergy leader are the person that they look to help guide them through this difficult issue. And so we worked really hard to reach out to a diverse group of clergy to get them to come to the Race and Faith Summit so that we could deliver this message to them. And as we talked with clergy afterwards and did some follow-up interviews, this was both a pro and a con, right? Because we don't want to be preaching to the choir. We don't want to only bring people out who are already committed to racial justice and tell them, hey, here are racial justice resources, racial justice matters, because they're already on board. But we also heard from some clergy members that because we had a pretty diverse group of clergy out, some of them weren't totally convinced that racial justice was something they should be doing, that this was a faith issue, that it was something that they should be talking about at church. And so some of those conversations over lunch were a little bit awkward and were a little bit hard. And maybe it wasn't 100% of a safe space for everyone to be there. Maybe some of the clergy heard some difficult things or heard some comments that were not particularly friendly when they were having those lunches. So it was a pro and a con to get all those people out. But we hope that, and we do think that seeing all the commitments and all the feedback that we've gotten of things that have happened since then, that some good things came from that. But it can be hard to reach the people who are on the fence and thinking race is something they should be talking about at their congregation.
Clergy can get really criticized by congregations, especially that are split. I know in my own congregation that my priest has said, I can't bring politics in from the pulpit because I will get criticized from both the left and the right. And race can be perceived as one of those issues that's so politically laden that it's like you're pushing this down our throat to have to be dealing with things. I think I applaud the work that you're doing on this difficult topic, that you're not, you know, going back to just a simple thing that, this is what we can have in common, but actually working through this together.
Yeah. You know, I think about so many different kinds of problems we have in our society now, and you're looking at a piece of it in a certain setting. The more I think about the different questions I might have for you about how you handle a particular problem, I'm already hearing some of the things you've already talked about that would probably apply, but I don't want to assume you have the same answers on everything. So let's throw this one at you. You know, in our society now, we've got this increasing political division. And one of the things that seems to happen when people retreat into their silos, into their sides, is to basically, it's all a kind of an all or none kind of thing. Like, our side is right, and to the point where they seem reluctant to acknowledge any potential negatives on their position or their argument, whereas they also, on the other end, you know, the other side, fail to acknowledge any potential value in those arguments or those positions. And that all or none approach, I think, is, you know, taking us down a bad place in our country. It also means we're getting further and further away from reality, because we know no side is perfect. So it's kind of becoming if not a fact-free environment, at least it's becoming more and more distorted and open to error. So given that kind of problem, I wonder if you have any suggestions based on your experience or studies that might help, whether it be the individual citizen or a politician or an entire party, to continue this appropriate competition in public policy ideas, and yet do so in a way that maintains a level of civility and factual basis in our political interchanges.
Oh, Glenn, these are such big problems that you're pointing out. And I hate to say, but like, as a political scientist, I see some really big structural problems here, from like gerrymandered districts that reward extreme candidates who go all the way to one side, and that's how they get elected, and social media algorithms that provide extreme content that's all the way to one side, because that's how they get clicks and that's how they get eyeballs on their content and that's how they make money. And because of those structures, parties and politicians and companies, they're not incentivized to change the way that they're doing things. They are incentivized to be polarized and to be divisive and to be extreme, which makes me sound very jaded. But I do think that there are things that we can do as individual people, and as individuals, we can, and those things that we can do can aggregate up. And so I would encourage people to widen their networks, to have friends from different political backgrounds, even if you're not talking about politics with them, just having people that you interact with that you know are from different political backgrounds helps break that silo, so that you don't demonize the outgroup, but you can see them as real people. So hang out with people from different racial or religious or socioeconomic backgrounds from you and different political views, because the world is a really big, beautiful place. And your perspective is just one perspective. So have friends, have a diverse network of lots of people. If you're not sure how to do that, I would, you know, go join a softball team or a bowling league, or go to the rock climbing gym, or go find a new place to hang out, or you can join a book group at the local library. Find a place to connect with new people. Go travel, see different parts of the world, and recognize that it is a beautiful, diverse place, and that your perspective is just one of many.
Very nice. Yeah. Also, along those lines, the idea, we always recommend that people try to diversify their news diet, their media diet, because the same thing we're talking about, the siloing, happens in media and in news and information. And so that's another thing I think that fits with what you're talking about.
It's great advice.
So much great advice here in terms of things that you've talked about, and the incentivizing to the be extreme is something that, in some ways, you know, the social media algorithms also do that, right? I mean, we get more likes if we're more extreme, and all of our people that are in our in-group are kind of like, they like us more if we are like latching on to ideas that are demonizing the other side. And so, you know, it's interesting. So I think many observers have argued in some ways that our, and this kind of goes back to that social identity theory that you brought up at the beginning, they've argued that our societal disagreements have become driven by these tribal or cultural disputes. It seems like that those basic values that we might hold in common matter less than the side that our own party chooses to take on the issue. And curious, are there any other ideas that you have on you know, besides widening our networks, on improving or resolving that tendency to just hunker down in our own belief systems?
I'm trying to find another way to say find cross-cutting alliances.
Let's think about it in terms of Arkansas in particular. Okay. So I'm going to be picking on us in particular. This is going to be with us. And I know you talked about gerrymandering some as well, but you know, we weren't always, and I'm saying this as a person that in Braver Angels, I serve as a red or more conservative representative. So I can speak about my own side sometimes in ways I think that it's harder for other people to speak about because it seems like they're criticizing. But we are really red in our politics in Arkansas. And so there's not a lot of motivation right now, even at the legislative level, for us to be. So let's talk about this in terms of politics, less about personal in terms of the way I'm not going to ask this question so that you'll maybe have a different suggestion. But in terms of if I was a politician today in the state house, I don't have to compromise like I used to when it was like more of a 50-50 kind of split. I don't have to work across the aisle. I can just push through my own agenda. And yet, is that what I really want to be doing? Because in Arkansas, we are a diverse state. We are rural. We are urban. It may be that right now we are electing people in general that are more conservative. But I have many of my colleagues and friends since I've been in Braver Angels that I recognize are not conservative. And so there are many people out there that do not share the same political views that I do. And yet, if I'm in the politics realm, you're training potential politicians in your classes. Just working with a student right now that is has a joint major in both of our departments, and he's interning with a national politician this summer, and he's conservative. And so I'm like, what do I say to him if he wants to go into politics when you're going to maybe coming back into a state where the politics seems to be pretty one-sided, as to how to work across the aisle when his tribe is saying, you don't need to work across the aisle because we've got the majority. So I'll ask the question that way. So in terms of how do we get, when we're in the majority and kind of go against our tribe at some level, to be able to work with people who are maybe not seen as being in the majority. Suggestions on that? That's a different question than what I was originally asking, but I'm curious about that.
Perhaps having a slightly jaded political scientist on is not what you're looking for here, but something that I tell my students, which is, you know, this will be on the test, is that politicians are single-minded seekers of re-election. So what politicians want to do is get re-elected. So if they are in a district that will vote 70% Republican, they are going to do things that will get the Republican voters to vote for them. And you're exactly right. They don't have any incentive to do things that will make the 30% of Democratic voters happy, because they don't need those Democratic voters to get elected. So the only reason that you could get someone to do a cooperative, bipartisan type of thing is if being cooperative and bipartisan becomes something that Republican voters want. So right now we have a culture where we're so divisive and so my team, your team, in-group, out-group, that voters are rewarding behaviors that say when a politician gets up and speaks that they just trash the other party and say terrible things about them and rah, rah, my team. And that's what's being rewarded. But if we could create a culture where a politician got up and said, I worked together with someone to create this common sense legislation that we can all agree on is a good thing. And it isn't art for our side or for your side. It's something that benefits our community. So maybe something like building a park or improving education or something that is not a divisive issue. Then, and we created a culture where people said, yes, working together for something that benefits our whole community is what we want to reward, then the politician would do that thing. But right now we don't have that culture. So maybe we could create that culture if enough people called and wrote the members of Congress and said, this is what we want you to do. And if we identified what are those common sense things and we pushed those things forward and said, we want you to do this, and we all wrote thank you letters when they did do it, and we all came out to big rallies and clapped for those bipartisan lines and booed at the really angry lines. But that's not the situation we have right now. Because politicians are single-minded seekers of re-election, they're going to do the things that get them reelected. So if I had a student who cared about policy, cared about like the actual outcomes of policy, and was turned off by the division and discord, and I'm only going to work to benefit my side, I would tell them to go work in local government or work for nonprofits or work for a think tank or work somewhere else. I would not tell them to work on a campaign, because the campaign is going to be about, or work for a politician, because it's going to be 80% of the time about getting that person reelected, not about finding the best policy to benefit your community.
I see that in the primaries as well, that single-minded seekers of reelection. And this, the thing that's sad to me about all of this is that they go so far to their sides, extremes, that the people who might be more moderate in the middle, and I have to believe there are more of us who aren't just out there on the extremes, can really, I mean, I would get upset with the commercials in the last primary season for my side, because I'm like, seriously, why do you have to do that? Why do you have to put down them? And I know that if you have a more extreme candidate that you're going up against, that you've got to show that you are extreme as well. But it turns off many of us who are more moderate from participating in politics.
We are trying in Braver Angels to bring people to the point where they value values rather than tribes, and do the things you're talking about, and vote for people who are willing to compromise. But I do believe there are politicians who actually do, come from a good place. They come in wanting to do good work. They have values they're trying to follow. But it's also true, realistically, that in politics, power is such a big issue. And it seems as if power is pretty much taken over everything, and values kind of fall by the wayside. So when you have someone who's wanting to do the right thing based on their values, if it conflicts with their ability to have the power to do that or to maintain their power in other areas, I mean, how in politics can we deal with that? It seems like things are always pushing people away from values and toward more base tribal power issues. Is there anything that we can do about that?
Yeah, it's really hard, because even the most well-intentioned politician, once they get elected or in the process of trying to get elected, will say, I have these values, or I want to pass these policies, or I'm really seeking the best for all the people in my community, but I can't do it unless I am elected. I can't do it unless I'm in power. And so I have to be the cutthroat, say the things, play the game, be the extreme in order to be elected and get in power, so that I can implement the policies, so that I can advocate for the people, so that I can promote the values that I really care about. But step one is get in power, which is why politicians are single-minded seekers of re-election. And unfortunately, we have structural problems through gerrymandering and single-member district plurality systems, where other countries have proportional representation, where instead of having one person represent a district, they would have, like in Arkansas, instead of every district having one person represent it, you would have the state of Arkansas, and then the state of Arkansas would get, four representatives, and then it would be allotted proportionally for how many Republicans and how many Democrats, what percentage of the vote they got. And so if that were the case, then you wouldn't need to gerrymander, and you would have a more equal representation. But these are structural problems, and the people in power in Congress would have to change the structure to a proportional representation system. They would have to stop gerrymandering. And right now the system is benefiting them, and so they're not going to change that structure.
I can see why you're jaded.
No, it's just 15 years of teaching political science, I'll do it to you.
Yeah. Well, no, I can get it. I see it too. But we've got to maintain hope. So let's talk about then, as we kind of wind down here, Where do you see Arkansas going in terms of its politics or any of the things that you're doing? But this, where's the future taking us? And I would hope that you would also not only talk about some of the, you know, concerns and fears about, because we've heard a lot of that, but also any hopes of how things may get better.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think April is right that Arkansas is a very red state. But for me, honestly, I see hope in conversations that are explicitly nonpartisan. So I know this is not necessarily what Braver Angels is about, but I think it's kind of under the surface. So I know you bring together people who are partisan from the left and the right. But then I think that when you have people come together and talk about things, but you don't say this is going to be a political conversation, I think you're more likely to have people have a positive outcome. So when we brought people together for our Little Rock conversation congregation study for those one-on-one conversations, we didn't say, and now you're going to talk about politics. But we did say, you know, here's a question. What do you think is the most important community issue facing our city right now? And we did ask them, what do you think we can do to help improve race relations in Little Rock? Those are political questions, but we didn't say, like, here's a divisive political issue, talk about it. So we weren't framing it as politics. And we started with them talking about, like, what is your favorite food from your childhood that you have a really good memory about? So that they are talking about something personal and sharing and connecting. And when those kinds of things happen, I think people aren't primed to be on the defensive, to be have their hackles up, to be talking about politics, and to be in that in-group, out-group frame. And I have hope that this work that we're doing on faith-based racial justice can bring a religion frame to the issue of race so that people don't come to it and have their defenses up to say, oh, this is going to be that critical race theory nonsense, but instead they can bring a faith frame to it and say, oh, I can see how my sacred texts inform this issue, and I can bring, you know, caring and a religious lens to this, and that can help me see it differently. Because that was one of the key things that we found in talking to clergy, that if they talk about race from a political view, people don't want to talk about it. But if they talk about race using scriptures or from a religious view, if they talk about the story of the Good Samaritan as an allegory for race, now that opens people's hearts to talking about race. But if they talk about politics and critical race theory and things like that, people shut down and say this isn't appropriate for church. But there's a way to talk about politics without talking about politics, or to let people know, to kind of trick people into talking about politics. I think we need to sneak politics in, because when we come at it in an overt way, people are ready to be defensive because politics is so divisive right now. But if we can sneak politics in to regular conversations, then I think people can be more open to it.
That's some fascinating ideas you have. And several of them, I think, are very consistent with what we do in Braver Angels. So do you have any other thoughts about how people can go off and make differences in their own communities or get involved in the kind of good work that they can do? Because they can all take your class. So what do you recommend for folks?
Yeah, I think that there are so many good things happening in our communities around us. And I have been really blessed to figure this out through the work I've done with congregations and nonprofits. And I would encourage people just to take a look around. If you're part of a faith community, see what kind of work your faith community is doing and get engaged, even just for an hour or two a month. It can be so, so rewarding. And if you're not part of a faith community, look in your local newspaper or on the website of your local university and see what kind of events and things there are happening. A lot of times there'll be like community service projects around, you know, Earth Day or Juneteenth or Martin Luther King Day or things like that. And being out in the community to help serve and connect and see new people on days like that can be really, really rewarding. So I would encourage you to to do that and get out there and meet new people and help and be a part of your community. It's one of the things that I found really just leads to a fuller, happier life.
That's a great thing to end on. Anything else you want to share with our listeners, Rebecca?
Thanks so much for having me. And I just really value the work that Braver Angels does. It's a difficult time to be doing this work, and I just admire you so much for it.
Well, we've really enjoyed hearing your thoughts and the perspective that you've shared. I know I always learn from our guests, and you're no exception on this. You have really shared a lot of things that have made me think today. And thank you for the amazing work that you're continuing to do in our community with the Little Rock Congregation Study, but also with our students from the state of Arkansas. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Rebecca. Really enjoyed hearing you.
Oh, that's so kind of you to say. It's been my joy. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed the second part of today's discussion with Dr. Rebecca Glazier. Be sure to check out the first part of that two-part conversation we had with Rebecca, as well as other podcast episodes of On the Other Hand. And they can be found on the podcast page of the Braver Angels Arkansas website at arkansas.braverangels.org or on many popular podcast sites.
When you visit our website, you can let us know what you think about our program by responding to a brief survey using the link on our podcast webpage. For program or speaker ideas or other feedback, email us at otherhandar@gmail.com. That's otherhandar@gmail.com.
On the Other Hand is sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas. Music was composed by Randall Standards of Jonesboro, Arkansas, and was performed by the University of Northern Colorado Symphonic Band, Dr. Richard Main, conductor.
From your host, Glenn White,
and April Chatham Carpenter,
let's each do our part to bring our community closer together.